I often read a column in the New York Times called The Ethicist, written by Kwame Anthony Appiah, who teaches at NYU. It's like a cross between Dear Abby and the philosophy course I took my freshman year of college. People send in letters outlining their quandaries, struggling in some way with discerning what is right. Over the last year or so, I've noticed what I think is a growing theme. My stepson's hateful views are damaging my business, one person wrote. What should I do? Her stepson was sharing politically charged posts on social media, which were driving people away from the family business. What was her obligation to him? Could she ethically distance herself from him? Is it okay to cut ties with a friend because of her views on vaccines? Someone else asked the ethicist. She was concerned about her own kids' health, who played with this close friend's unvaccinated kids, and also worried about whether she wanted to spend time with someone who was supporting what she understood to be conspiracy theories. I think Appiah, the columnist, does a good job of teasing out some of the bigger questions that stand behind a presenting issue. Questions like, what do we owe each other? What is fair and what is just? And what if those two are different? How do I square what I need and want with other people's needs and wants? And there is this mounting theme that I'm noticing, something that seems to be on people's hearts and minds more and more these days. It's a theme that gets at those deeper questions like, for whom am I responsible? Who do I have to help? Who am I allowed to leave behind? Do we have to stay connected to people with whom we seriously disagree? It doesn't surprise me that people are grappling with these questions. From the top of our national leadership on down, division is being modeled and often encouraged. This hostility is everywhere, telling us that whatever side you're on, the other side is completely wrong, probably evil, probably disposable. And then we come together as a faith community, and we get to consider the possibility of choosing a different way to live. So often, this is what our sacred stories offer us, and today they do so in spades. In our reading from the Hebrew Scriptures this morning, we are stepping into a long and complicated story. We heard some of the buildup last week. Joseph, the youngest son of Jacob, has landed in a horrible situation. His brothers detest him. He is their father's favorite, and it shows. It's unfair. He seems different from the others, a dreamer, they call him, and he's always flouncing around in that long, colorful robe while they are busy doing the hard work of tending the flocks. Their resentment soon gets out of hand. First, they plot to kill him. Then they back off and just throw him into a pit. There's not even any water in it, though. And then finally, they sell him into slavery, lining their own pockets. And that seems to be it, at least from their perspective. But Joseph's story continues far beyond their reach in Egypt. Slowly, over years, his wisdom and creativity help him rise in Pharaoh's government. He interprets dreams that no one else can make sense of. And in the process, he designs a way to avoid the looming famine that he has predicted. It works, and he's given more power in Egypt. The famine isn't limited to Egypt, though. His family and former community are perishing, and so his brothers come to Egypt in search of food. There, they meet Joseph, though they don't realize that it's him. And it's in that in-between moment when he knows who he faces but hasn't yet chosen the way forward. This is when our reading picks up today. He has options. It would be fair to turn his brothers away, hungry and empty-handed. They deserve it, right? That's what they get for having sold him into slavery. Who could blame him? I want to press pause on this story and bring the Canaanite woman from our gospel onto the scene. She is an outsider, and she is desperate. A woman of another ethnic group should not be talking to Jesus, a Hebrew man. She does not practice the same religion, but in her wisdom and openness, she senses that something miraculous could be close at hand. She reaches boldly, shouting to him, causing a scene. Her daughter is terribly sick. This mother is willing to do anything, including talking back to this teacher who she shouldn't be talking to in the first place. And Jesus says this, that his help is not for her. It wouldn't have been a surprising response then. He thought, they all thought, that he was there for the people of Israel. Full stop. He calls her a dog, trying to send her away. But she sees something else, something more, and insists on it. Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Incredibly, he hears her. And there, in that moment, something is transformed. There is an opening, the introduction of possibility that wasn't there seconds earlier. There is space for her to stand with dignity, for her daughter to be healed. There is room for Jesus to belong to her and for her to belong to him. I don't think she could have imagined even the day before that their lives would be saved by this itinerant rabbi. And I don't expect Jesus would have imagined that his understanding of his ministry would be stretched and changed, expanded to encompass all people everywhere. By this woman, this outsider, she shows that a different way is possible. One based not on old rules, old assumptions, old grudges. She shows that abundant life can come from the places and people we least expect. We can be made whole by the ones we wanted to keep as far away as possible. And this is exactly what Joseph chooses also. He has the upper hand now, still with fabulous robes, I hope, but now he also has the palace and the power and the control over all the grain in that hungry land. He could punish his brothers. He could rub it in their faces. Or he could simply turn his back and wash his hands of them. He owes them nothing. And instead, astonishingly, he chooses compassion. He reveals his identity. He forgives them and he feeds them. He runs with the dreams that lead to more life for everyone involved. And these cruel brothers are saved by the last person they would ever expect to help them. To be abundantly clear, These stories are not asking us to quietly accept abuse. This is not encouragement to stay where we are unsafe or to put up with violence. Instead, I think these stories are about recognizing our power and our potential to choose another way, to transform what has been awful and partner with God in making space for more life. But it's work we're asked to engage only when we are in a safe place to do so. That power and that potential, though, they are present. And they are tremendous. They make a new way possible. We are called to create and participate in a different economy. And this power to be bold, to chart a different route, helps to get us there. By economy, I don't just mean how we earn and spend money, though that is surely part of it. But much more than that, I mean all the ways we register value or debt. It comes in questions like, what do I owe someone? Are they worth my time? Could I just cut my losses and write them off? Each time we interact, we get to choose. Will we draw the circle wider, as the Canaanite woman insists, or will we pull it in tighter to protect ourselves and our people more intently? Will we share the abundance that we have, trusting that God will help us find the way forward? Will we share it with those who need it, even if we think they didn't earn it? Or maybe even like Joseph with his brothers, if they've done us wrong. Ultimately, Jesus doesn't call us to work for what's fair. And he never promises that things will work out that way. Instead, he calls us to work with God for everyone's salvation, for everyone's thriving. The table has to be longer. More chairs need to be pulled up and plates laid down. This goodness is for all people, no matter how they arrived here or when or why. Divisions are deep and growing deeper, but we can choose another way, a way that recognizes that no one is disposable. A way that understands that asking what we owe someone is rarely the question that will lead us closer into the kingdom of God. Friends, we need each other, every last one. We are asked to care for each other, to feed each other, to heal each other, every last one. This is how abundant life comes. And this is how we all, how all of us, are made whole.